Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
For sure.
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 Welcome to another episode of For Sure, a 200-foot podcast. I'm Peter.
And this is Sarah.
All right, Sarah. So we have I'm trying to remember. It's definitely at least three time. It could possibly be four time. We'll have to talk about it in a second. Returning champion. I think definitely in the lead if we ever do the For Sure green jacket or whatever it is. I think it's the green jacket that they give to the returning SNL hosts when they've done it five times or something like that. But anyway, so we have returning champion, Chris Watkins is here with us, AKA YOLO Pinato on Twitter. When he's on Twitter, AKA the guy on Twitter that tells you everything you like is terrible. And everything you think is good is actually bad. So I know that's a lot to live up to, Chris, but I know you could definitely do it. So how are you doing tonight?
Oh man, hating summertime. I'm doing good, man. It's the temporary heat wave as we got pushed closer to the sun's orbit has seems to have abated, at least here in the Midwest. But we'll see how long that lasts. Well, then that, no complaints on my end. How about you all?
Pretty good. I want not to reveal anything, but you're wearing a sweatshirt and I am just impressed, concerned.
So the fun part about growing up in Chicago is like I literally just never paid attention to the weather. Like I would be like, all right, you know, shorts, it's like 35 degrees out. Yeah, shorts, that's shorts weather. Or it's like, you know, 95. I was like, okay, I'll play basketball and like sweatpants and go to the beach in like boots and stuff. So I unfortunately have no idea how hot it actually is. I just see my wife like complaining and then like, okay, that's what season it is. So
yeah. So you recently moved from a city very close to me. I'm a little bit sad that you won't be as close for, you know, any type of potential meetups in the future. But basically you moved from New York to Chicago. So how was the move? How are you settling in? How's it going?
It's all good. I'm in a room. We had some guests over yesterday. So, you know, make sure everybody was backed up and then shoved all of our unpacked boxes into this room here. So
yeah.
This is my soundproof studio for podcast recording. But for the most part, it's good, man. It's good to have some not be confined to, you know, very like 10 by 10 foot square in the middle of New York. The baby has her own bedroom now, so she's like going, you know, absolutely crazy over that. And it's good to have my not to be in my parents' basement like we were for the past couple of months, but we were completing the move. So yeah, so to all the people out there who are like looking at my bio, I was like, yeah, go blog from your mom's basement, and I couldn't say anything because I actually was. you know, I'm glad to have the leg up on them once again.
Yeah, with your Twitter personality, you never want to show any weakness.
Exactly. It's not in my best interest. So glad to be ahead in the game.
Yeah. So for anybody who doesn't know, if you don't follow Chris on Twitter, YOLO_Pinato, I would say 50% of the time it's Chris like making fun of Toronto fans, basically trying to like, he has a competition with Nick Mercadante about which one of them control the Toronto Leafs fan base the most. And it's pretty impressive. But another rivalry, I guess maybe in the making, is Montreal versus Tampa Bay. Look at that segue. Sure. Yeah, look at that segue, right? Because we have just finished the Stanley Cup final a couple nights ago. Toronto. Oh my God. I'm getting ahead of myself for talking about like another question that I was thinking about before. Toronto
on the brain. Don't put Toronto and Stanley Cup in the same sentence unless it's about how they didn't make it.
People always know it's a mistake. They're like, wait a second, hold on, something's wrong there. Like they're gonna know why I obviously misspoke. Tampa Bay makes it a repeat, two in a row, beating Montreal. Chris, I know you, from what I understand, like you didn't watch a ton of it, but I know, you know, obviously, you know the teams and et cetera, et cetera. So what did you think about this matchup? What did you think about, you know, kind of Tampa winning two in a row, Montreal making it all the way to the finals against all odds, et cetera? Like, you know, what are your thoughts about the end of the NHL season?
Yeah, I mean, I think my first takeaway was like, okay, all is right with the world. Like, if heaven forbid Montreal would have won, I actually don't have that big of an issue with Montreal as a team. Like, their fans are not on social media enough for me to worry too much about them. or they are, but it's on like the Francophone version of Twitter. So, so I'm not too worried about pissing them off. I do have a long standing dislike of Carey Price's reputation, not him as a person. I think he's an amazing person. I think I might have said that Carey Price is the most overrated player in NHL history. and this playoff run did not do anything to dispel that notion one way or the other. So I think all was right with the world that Tampa Bay won, because I think anybody who's watching hockey, whether you're for analytics or against it, can derive their own narrative. Like, hey, you know, analytics, like, you know, hey, they're good. You know, they built the team top to bottom. They have skill on the fourth line. They've done a good job drafting and developing. They've, you know, taken shots on, you know, smaller guys like Brady Point and Russian guys like, you know, Nikita Kucherov, and really built it up. They also built through a rebuild of getting Stamkos and Hedman. And then the non-analytics guys can counter and say, well, they didn't get over the top, so they got, you know, Barclay Goudreau and Blake Coleman and Pat Maroon and all these, you know, bottom six guys that help push them over the top. So everybody's happy at the end of the day when Tampa Bay wins. If Montreal would have won, like, oh my goodness, no GM would ever be fired again. Like, they would just like lock into like appointments. Because it's like, yeah, you know, I know Barton Bergevin was in the job for 10 years, but look, he splurged on a whole bunch of like third pairing defensemen and a backup goalie and Josh Anderson and like, look, he made a Stanley Cup run. I'm like, okay. Like, we saw Dallas last year. Like, you all were there, right? Like, yeah. everyone said the same thing about Dallas. Like, yeah, you got to build like Gritty and all that and do your goaltender. It's like, okay, like, what happened to Dallas this year? So, like, but yes, like, as much as I don't like the Canadian hockey fans in terms of the ones that are just super, like, over enthusiastic about their team, I like, they deserve one. And eventually they have to win one, and no matter which fan base wins, they're going to be annoying about it. So it's like, might as well just rip the mandate off and let it happen like eventually. But I would actually prefer it to happen to a good team instead of this version of the Canadiens. But for the most part, I mean, I think the right team won. Kudos to the Canadiens for doing what they were supposed to do and beating the teams in front of them, especially Vegas. But yeah, I mean, I thought in terms of like the world not ending tomorrow outcome, like that was the best case scenario for everyone.
Peter, who are you rooting for?
I was rooting for Montreal because I want to see the world burn.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I don't like, okay. On one level, I like that Tampa Bay, you know, basically they kind of built up their team, Chris, like you were talking about before, you know, some of the guys that they got are, you know, smaller guys, but they're still obviously, you know, good players. They kind of went against some of the narratives, on how to build a team. But, you know, like you said before, like so well is like you could almost find kind of any narrative you want. So it's like on one level, I respect Tampa Bay a lot. I think like, for example, if you're watching, you know, if you're trying to figure like how to do an NHL power play, you know, you could do, you know, it's hard to do much better than Tampa's power play when they're really clicking. You know, they have one-time options on both sides. You know, they're kind of moving the puck so fast. You know, they're not allowing teams to get set up, you know, as opposed to when, you know, I watch Detroit and basically it's kind of lackadaisical and it's always going to one side. And, you know, when you watch Tampa Bay, you can see like, oh, it could actually be different. It could be better. You know, so I like that aspect of Tampa. Like it's hard. Like, I mean, I can't say, oh, they didn't deserve it. You know, I can't say, oh, they were, you know, they weren't a good team. They weren't good enough to win. I mean, of course they were, but I don't know. As a Detroit fan, I just don't like Tampa. Kucherov is an amazing player. He's also low-key one of the dirtiest players in the NHL. Oh, yeah. He's kind of got that Malkin thing where, you know, if you don't watch him a lot, you don't see it. But I remember I did a podcast a while ago with, I think it was Caitlin Divadoc, who covered Pittsburgh, and I said that something about Malkin being one of the the most low key dirty players in the league, and she was like, oh, 100%, oh, 100%, you know, she's like, he is one of the dirtiest players in the league. Like, it's just that he's so good, and it's like, you know, Kucherov pulls shit all the time, and you know, as a fan of a team that plays both of those teams, I think I hate Montreal less. You know, in terms of just like seeing them play against us. So because of that, I wanted Montreal to win. What about you, Sarah?
Ooh, tiebreaker. All right. I didn't really watch too much of it. I guess I was leaning Tampa just for the world will make sense. You know, but also extremely biased in saying, okay, well, the Iser plan worked for them. So he should be, you know, even more invested in Detroit. That's like his home. So the Iser plan can work for us too. You know, he's not that far removed from them. You know, I was looking at pictures for, you know, meme reasons, and realized when he was in Tampa, he was like always dressed like a Bond villain. And now it's like he wears like sweatshirts and like sweater vests, and he's got this like cozy comfort on. So I'm like, see, he's so comfortable here. He doesn't feel like he needs his armor. He's gonna totally build it up. We're gonna be even better. You know, and it's kind of like you said, it's hard to hate the Canadians just because it's so funny that we beat them four times last year. So it's like we have this, you know, petty victory. And as long as they're showing 2009 Game 7 highlights every Stanley Cup final, I am going to keep digging up any morsel of happiness from the past that I can until they finally bury that, which they probably will next year because they won't have the rights to the NBC footage because it'll be on ESPN. So there we go. But that's a long about way to say, I guess I was happy for Tampa and how mad it made everyone. They're like $16 million over the cap. Like, well, yeah, that's the rules. They played by the rules. You just hate the rules. So maybe this will inspire them to change it.
Oh my God. So I was just thinking, and I have to say this really quick. I'm not sure, Chris, I'm not sure if you're somebody who watches this, but I'm 99% sure that Sarah watches this every year. When you said that, like they're not going to be able to show it anymore. Sure. I was thinking like, how can they still bother you? And then I remembered that every year on British television, they have the Big Fat Quiz of the Year, and they have a group of school children act out events from the past. And so next year they're going to have, like, Sarah's going to be watching it, and all of a sudden, she'd be like, I'm Nicholas Lidstrom. I have the puck. And Sarah will be like, what? What? How did they get to be here?
Yeah, or they'll be like, they're going to finally take up my offer of NHL Drunk History series. Yeah. And instead of doing Fight Night at the Joe, like I think would be awesome, they'll do that.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God. But yeah, so another NHL season down. Obviously, we're all hoping that next year could be closer to normal. You know, from what I understand, I know nothing's permanent, you know, totally set in stone, but a lot of the changes that they had previously for this year and then for the bubble, et cetera, it's, you know, they're trying to be as close to back to normal as possible for next year. I think as far as I as far as I know, it should be the back to the same divisions, you know, back to the regular divisions. I know they said no Canadian division anymore, which I don't know. I just think it would be really funny if Toronto got a Canadian division again and then still failed to make it again. That would be unbelievable.
I mean, yeah, I reiterated the point, but I was like, I think, as I said at the top, like, I think Toronto actually got a pass because, like, if, I mean, like, the NHL did everything they could. It's almost like, you know, you used to watch wrestling or whatever, and it's like, oh, yeah, you know, Stone Cold is, like, going against Vince McMahon. And the commissioner is like, all right, yeah, I'm going to have you go against this guy and four other guys. And then we're going to, like, break all the rules and distract the referee and, like, hit you in the leg with, like, a chair and all this stuff like that. And, like, Stone Cold still wins somehow or whatever. Or, like, you know, Vince McMahon still loses. And I felt like that was Toronto. Like, Gary Bettman did everything possible to get his team over, like, the moneymaker for the league over. And they still couldn't do it. And I'm like, I feel like we're not giving them enough shade. Like, Toronto fans are the most obnoxious fans in the world because – it's different, you know, when you're talking about, you know, Pittsburgh fans, you know, they won recently. The Rangers fans, they at least made it to the Cup final recently, all that stuff like that. I'm trying to think of my other list of various enemies on the hockey Twitter. But Toronto has nothing to base any, like, shade on. Like, their only thing is, oh, man, we're living rent-free in your head. It's like, yes, because, like, half of hockey media is, like, paid out of your coffers. That's literally the only reason why anybody cares. If you all were based in, you know, Halifax, Nova Scotia, like, no one would give a shit. Like,
exactly.
Like, so I feel like they got a free pass, like, because everybody naturally moved on. Like, no, because if the shoe was on the other foot and they had won, you would only hear about it in the months after the Cup final, but that'd be like the next 10 years. Like, they would never shut up about it. I mean, yeah. It's like the Cavs fans now, like, except turn up to 10. Where it's just like every 5 seconds they remind you that they won in 2018. We remember all of the decades before where you all didn't win and literally in the most excruciating fashions possible. We didn't forget those. And so Toronto, I feel like, would just be like multiplied like times infinity. And, you know, Cavs fans have gotten in the past since they won a cup. I feel like Toronto would like, yeah, remember those 50 years of incompetence? Like, forget all those. Like, we're the best now. I'm like, I don't think that's how that works.
But. Which would make it, I think, better for next year to go back, because then, like, they'll be like, ha, 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 we aren't at the bottom of the Atlantic. And be like, so? We don't, that's not a burn on us. We, like, Red Wings, we know we're bad. So yeah, really, that's like, you know, again, that puts us back in the position to be the spoilers. Be like, okay, if we're back in a division with, like, Tampa and Toronto and Montreal, like, what are they going to do? Beat us? Right. If we beat them, it's like, we won the Stanley Cup. If they beat us, it's like, oh, good. Check the box. Analytics works. Like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, bring everybody back home. Bring Dallas in. Bring everybody. Let's just build a division of all the, like, almost and the winners.
Right.
And then just see how that stacks up against the worst team ever.
Right, oh, man. Yeah, I was thinking as you were talking, I was getting a picture in my head, Chris, of Mark Bergevin throwing Kyle Dubas off of Hell in a Cell. And I was like, oh boy, it's like the one wrestling reference I know.
I would pay to see just like a GM, like even in any competition, like it could be Tiddlywinks or like it could be wrestling. Like, I don't care. Like, I want to see Bergevin put those muscles to use, like, or at least like, you know, for the trade calls, like you got to like arm wrestle the other guy or whatever.
Yeah.
And like that increases the draft picks. Like, I just want to see him actually use the muscles for his job, like just once.
Yeah. Do schools still have field day where you're like send kids to jump over hay bales and like put a bat on their head and spin around and get dizzy? Like, that's how they should start doing draft picks, like draft order is field day events, tug of war. Let's make this more interesting. They need ratings. There you go. That's more interesting than bingo balls.
And on that note, we're going to take our first break. That seems like a good place to stop. So when we come back, we're going to have more with Chris Watkins. And we're back. So we are here once again with Chris Watkins, who's joining us for the entire episode. So obviously that's awesome. We are going to you know, basically there's a story going on in the NHL and in, you know, in Chicago specifically, but you know, obviously there's a lot to say about the NHL and how it handles things like this. I'm pretty sure if I remember correctly, I don't think Sarah and I have talked about it on the show, but we wanted to talk about it, especially because Chris, with your background in Chicago, it obviously makes perfect sense. So for people listening at home, I'm guessing you know what we're talking about, but just in case, I'll give you a little you know, kind of primer on what's going on. So basically, there's been an accusation by a well, actually, it's hard now because there's been different accusations, right? But there's it started off with an allegation that one of the Chicago Blackhawks video coaches sexually assaulted, I believe it was not just one, but it was several players. And basically the short version, as we understand it now, and obviously, you know, we know this through filings and things like that. So it's allegations at this point, where basically the allegation is, well, like I said before, that there's sexual assault. And the gist of it is the allegation is that basically the team did not really do anything to take care of it. They didn't report it to authorities. And from what I understand, the one of the allegations is that they not only didn't report it, but when the person left the team, left the organization, they gave him a recommendation. And in the after he left Chicago, he went on to abuse other people, according to allegations. So, you know, this has brought up a lot of, you know, goes without saying that this is a terrible story. It's, you know, something that nobody ever wants to have to deal with. But it's kind of shining a light on a lot of the issues that we've talked about over the years in terms of the way that culture, you know, hockey culture is, where a lot of issues kind of like they're trying to be swept under the rug or dismissed or covered up or things like that. Like basically everything other than like actually dealing with the problems. I guess rather than just like ask a specific question, I'll kind of jump right to like, so Chris, like seeing this story, like, you know, what do you think about this? Especially, like I said before, in the context of all the other things that we've talked about before with this league.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is, yeah, definitely indicative of a culture that's permissive of, you know, a variety of activities that in a normal workplace would just not be allowed. You know, there was also, I want to say a few months ago, a pretty bad report coming out of the Pittsburgh Penguins organization around one of the coaches, I think, WSB. I forgot what their junior team. But going to the Chicago allegations in general, you know, as I and other people have pointed out, this was happening generally around the same time that the Hakeem Olu accusations against, I think it was Jeff Peters, but his accusations of racism within the Blackhawks organization, that was at the junior level. And so what it sounds like you have here is a culture that just allowed a lot of these negative behaviors to permeate. And what's more damning and what came up in the lawsuit from one of the affected victims after the individual, I think his name is Brad Aldridge, left the Blackhawks, was saying like, you wrote a glowing recommendation of this individual knowing what they did and what they were accused of. And eventually this individual went on to work with minors and was accused and actually charged with assaulting a minor after he left the Blackhawks. And, you know, that to me was like, should have been red flag number one. It's like, oh, we messed up. We know we're coming out. We're going to the police immediately with what we know about this to corroborate the statements and X, Y, and Z. And that wasn't the case until it was brought back up into the news recently. And so I think there's just too many situations that have happened on a regular basis within hockey for hockey, the hockey powers that be, to be given the benefit of the doubt. Another great example is with Mason Miller last year getting drafted by the Arizona Coyotes. And, you know, they made statements about doing their due diligence, X, Y, and Z, but until public pressure escalated to a point where it was no longer tenable for them to bring this draft pick onto their team, they would have pretended like that wouldn't have happened. And for people that don't remember, that was the individual who was accused of, I believe in middle school or high school, of, you know, playing a very nasty and disgusting prank on a black classmate, calling him all types of derogatory names, and only finding this out after he was drafted, basically. So there's just too many of these situations where, you know, as good as, you know, people might be at drafting, developing, signing, free agents, X, Y, and Z, like ultimately at the end of the day, what you're ultimately judged on is your character and integrity. And for as often as we cite, you know, these hockey people in power as leaders and leaders of men and so on and so forth, there's just too many situations of them literally dropping the ball in terms of taking a step forward. It's easy to lead when everyone else is following you. The hard part is to take a step forward and do the right thing when no one else is willing to do so. And there are just so many situations where you do not see that, where it calls into question, what is the level of integrity of these people in these positions of power? Because that's literally the only way these things happen on a recurring basis.
Yeah. And I think you see it a lot where in, you know, pretty much any situation, the NHL will just do the absolute bare minimum, be like, well, legally we're like doing exactly as much as we have to do.
Right.
You know, or due diligence. Technically we don't have to report because of this, you know, legalese, blah, 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 where, you know, as everyone else is horrified being like, you don't get to just be like, well, you know, the fine print says we don't have to. It's like, well, aren't you like a human person? Right. Any human person would look at any of this and say, okay, I should like not only go the extra mile, but I should do every possible thing to protect, you know, anyone from a predator or from, you know, a horrible bully or, you know, from anyone who is a terrible person or doing terrible things. Like you, you know, that's just kind of this extra level, you know, of them making it worse by doing the minimum, but saying like, well, we did everything we could do. And by that, I mean, we did as little as possible just to make sure that we're not going to get sued. And it's so, and then they go, well, hockey is for everyone. And here's some rainbow merchandise. And it's just like, I don't even know. Yeah. I don't even know. I just make like strangling at the air because I don't know what to say.
I'm in my job as a teacher, I'm what's called a mandatory reporter, where I think that's the term, where if I suspect abuse of one of my students, like, you know, if they come in and, you know, they have bruises on them or, yeah, I mean, you know, there's a whole bunch of different things. If I suspect that there's something, I am required by law to report it. But I mean, it's almost like if for some reason it was like, oh, well, you know, I'm not saying this is the law, but it's like, you know, if the law says, well, they have to be my specific student, like I have to have them in my class. Well, okay, cool. I guess I'll just turn around and do nothing. You know, like that's basically what they did according to the allegation. You know, and like I wrote about the other day, the team denies it, but I mean, do they have any credibility at this point? Right. You know, not really. I mean, I don't give them any credibility. You know, but kind of tying it back, you know, not saying that it doesn't deserve its own attention, because of course it does. I mean, honestly, I agree with people that have said that, like, it's the most important story in hockey right now, more important than the Stanley Cup, more important than any of this stuff. It's the most important thing going on. But, you know, it fits into the bigger picture of what we've been talking about with hockey culture, et cetera, where, you know, it's, based on what we understand, it's hard to imagine that a lot of the people that worked for Chicago at the time, who now are in positions of power at other teams, I don't want to say it's impossible to imagine that they didn't know, but it doesn't pass the smell test, you know, if based on what we know, you know, and it sucks. 'Cause it's like, I don't know. It's like every time you turn around, it seems like at least once a week, there's a story somewhat like this, maybe not to this extent, but it's something, you know, it's Mike Babcock. It's, you know, Don Cherry, you know, I mean, for the millionth time, but then it's not just Don Cherry saying stuff. It's Ron McLean sitting next to him and, you know, I can't think of the term. I'm a little bit upset. I can't think of the term I want, you know, kind of like making it okay because Ron McLean's there, you know, yeah. it can't be that bad because he's a good guy.
Yeah, he's normalizing it. Yeah.
Normalize. That's it. That's exactly what I was thinking of, you know, and then you have all the people in hockey, like defending, oh, it's not that bad or whatever.
Right.
It just gets harder and harder to be like, this is something I want to be a part of. I mean, that sounds horrible, but it's true.
No, so two things. So I worked for almost a decade in HR in some pretty senior leadership positions. And so in those roles, you know, especially in workplaces that we had like zero tolerance policies, you have these situations where it is like, okay, who do you trust? Who do you believe in? You know, there is legal ramifications and all that stuff like that. But what I learned, especially as I got more experienced in the field, is that generally you try to lean on what's right. You know, if you have an organization from the top down that says we're going to lean on doing what's right, what's ethically right, as much as possible. Like legal ramifications, sure, but even for the Blackhawks, you know, going back, you're saying like, okay, you know, I've had situations, you know, at previous employers where senior executives were accused of things such as sexual assault and have left to go on to other places and were fired as a result of those investigations. And legally, we were restricted in some of the things that we can say, but we would not give a glowing recommendation of that individual going forward. We would have all the paperwork and the documentation and go through all the legal channels available to us when that person was in our jurisdiction to ensure that we did all that we could or whatever. We're not preventing, we are not able to prevent that person from getting gainful employment from there on out. But we can ensure that this person is never going to work at our company again, that we follow all the proper channels and we are protected from a lawsuit. So to hear, yeah, I didn't know what was going on. Like, it's your job to know what's going on. Like, if you don't know what's going on, you know, you can't put your head in the sand. It's like, I didn't see it. Therefore, it's not my fault that it happened. Like, it is literally your job to know these things happening in your organization. And if you don't, that means that you don't have the proper structures in place to do that. You know, if all of a sudden, you know, 20 AHL players got injured and had career ending injuries or whatever, and they were being, overworked in the practice or whatever, the GM could not be like, well, yeah, I didn't know what was going on. Like, that is literally your job to know what is going on with your prize prospects, even at the lowest level in ECHL. So you can't use the same logic or whatever to say like, well, I didn't know what was going on, like with players within your team, especially because all evidence shows and all testimony that's been made public now shows that you did know and chose not to do anything about it. And so I think, you know, it's an easy cop out for a lot of people within hockey and a lot of organizations in general to just sort of use that as air cover. But I think at the end of the day, like what we've seen consistently, as Sarah said, in the opportunities where the NHL and the teams can lead from ahead and say, we're going to be aggressive and just do the right thing and we'll figure out all the downstream effects later, they never do that. And then downstream effects are always worse as a result. You know, hey, yeah, oh, you know, and racism is our thing. It's like, yeah, like these token things of showing the right thing are like 17 months too late. And like now everybody's moved on to much more substantive courses of action. And like, and so at the end of the day, I think because of how long this has played out, how long people have been able to succeed and been allowed to do things, like, saw what happened in the MLB with the Astros like cheating scandal. To me, this is right up there. I would prefer that everybody is at least, you know, at the very least suspended for a season. I prefer to see like none of these people ever to work in the game of hockey again, but at least a substantial, significant financial impacts to them where they are not allowed to continue in the same roles that they have currently. Because to be honest, if this was found out back then, they wouldn't be in these positions in the first place. So Mark Bergevin, Stan Bowman on down, like all those people should be on the chopping block right now.
Yeah. And like you said, I mean, it took a decade for this to come out. You know, what's happened since then, you know, and not just with the Blackhawks, like if something this horrible takes 10 years for someone to, you know, and this is not victim blame at all whatsoever, but saying, you know, that it that long, there's 10 years of history now where, you know, in my experience, when someone is not faces no consequences, they're never going to change their behavior. So, you know, with the NHL, it seems they'll be like, well, they'll straighten themselves out. No, they won't. No one in history has ever straightened themselves out. Right. With like, it's like, well, you could just keep giving them money and airtime and prestige.
Yeah.
I'm sure that they've learned their lesson. Like they didn't, there was no lesson. You didn't even teach them a lesson. Like right. There was, you know, so it's, you know, it's like how every rock that's turned over there's something worse, and then there's 10,000 more rocks to keep turning over, and it's so.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna make like angry noises because
like the Babcock stuff didn't come out. The Babcock Franz and stuff didn't come out until the Babcock Marner stuff came out.
Right.
And then you're hearing about all this other stuff that he did, and I don't think any one of us will be surprised to see him coaching in the NHL next year.
Yeah.
He's going to be back in the NHL because there's no consequences. It sucks. I'm trying to think of a better way to end this segment, but I think, unfortunately, I think it's a fitting end to say this sucks, rather than me try to make something positive out of it, because it's not positive. It's not positive. Like, it's bad. It's bad. We want it to be better. People are trying to make it better, but it sucks. So we're going to go to a break. We're going to come back and we're going to answer some of your mailbag questions, which will be fun. It will not suck, but we'll be right back.
And we're back, and we're going to move on to a couple of mailbag questions. And we're going to go ahead and start with our friend JJ from Kansas. And this one's for you, Chris. He wants you to share your favorite comeback to a salty Leafs fan, as well as some tips and tricks for kicking that hornet's nest.
Favorite comeback against the Leafs. I thought it meant like favorite. I thought it was like favorite comeback that like the Leafs were involved in.
No, like something something mean that you've said. And funny.
That makes more sense. So I think, yeah. So the 50, so they won in 1967. So what is it? 50, it'll be 55 years. So that one only really works with older fans. They haven't, younger, tech savvy fans haven't been around and suffered through, like, I guess the really bad 80s, like when Edmonton and the Islanders were winning all the time and all this stuff. So the no win since 2000, like basically basing everything said, you haven't won since 2004, since like Bush was in the office, or since like Kanye West was like cool or something like that. Like, just like dating everything, 50 Cent was still considered like a good rapper, like just dating everything back then. It is a good one. Nathan Horton, my favorite one it's a two-sided thing, because you insult a Leafs fan and then also lift up another fan base, is also always to point out Lou Lamoriello's success since leaving the Leafs, because that really sticks across. Like, oh yeah, Dubas is like, I can't tell you how many people were like advocating for Dubas as GM of the year, and I'm like, oh yes, like I love it. Keep it coming. And then as soon as they lose, like, well, we should have kept Lou Lamoriello. And I have mixed feelings about Lou's time in Toronto, but I still feel that a majority of credit, even for the team's current success, probably goes to him. As in the same vein that, oh, not to him, but previous GMs, Dave Nonis, Brian Burke, all that stuff like that. In the same way, I feel like Darcy Sloan doesn't get enough credit for the Islanders' current run of success. But that one really did, because they have no comeback. There's nothing they can come back from. Where it's like, well, but the Islanders, and it's like, then they shut up. So, that's the best one. So I would say, about the Islanders. If you want to like really kick the hornet's nest, I mean, you can just point out like all the teams that you think are going to be better than them and just get real ridiculous with it. Like, Carolina, okay, sure. That's fine. They can justify that explanation. Like I said, the Islanders, but then when you get real obscure and say like the Senators, then that's really starting to piss them off. You can say something like the Ducks. It's like, hey man, Jake Sanderson in like 5 years, man, he's gonna make Morgan Riley look like crap or whatever. Just like just go really deep there. But like at this point, it's like it's almost too easy. Like they only have the argument that they're the most popular team and that everybody cares about them. I'm like, I don't live in Canada. I pay zero attention to this. I have to live like a smaller, like slightly cleaner Chicago. But no one is spending like tons and tons of energy thinking about like all of the Chicago teams or whatever. So it's like, yeah. So I think Yeah, that's the other thing I say. I just like no one cares about Canada enough to have really a strong opinion about the Leafs except in Canada. And even then, like no one really cares about them either. So yeah, that really pisses them off. So that would be my assessment to JJ.
Nice.
Better insult than I have. I just, anytime they're like, well, Austin Matthews, like, well, Austin Matthews looks like Robert Zadar with a terrible mustache. Like, but not enough people have seen Robert Zadar movies to get that reference. So I was like, as long as I think I'm funny.
I think my favorite was that Austin Matthews. Oh my God. I'm really in it tonight, aren't I? That Austin Matthews looks like the lobby boy in that Wes Anderson movie. I forget what it's called. Oh my God. I don't know. I love that movie. I just can't remember what it's called.
No,
the
Skewer D-Cup one is for anyone that's a Parks and Recreation fan. There was an episode that Ron Swanson was trying to avoid getting back with his ex-wife.
Oh yeah.
And they end up getting back together, and there was a lot of friction in their reconnection. And he basically rubbed off his mustache as a result. That's what Austin Matthews' mustache looks like. So you got to screenshot the side by side of that, and then like you're just undefeated for the rest of the year.
Oh my God, awesome! All right, so we have another one from Mike Lon. We answered the first part. It was about the Blackhawks thing that we already talked about. And so this other one was for the two of us, but you know, sometimes we'll have, segments with just the two of us and then the interview. So we're going to throw it to all of us. So which is the greatest hockey game played not featuring a team you support?
It's gotta be a game 7, I think, for me. And you know, there's been a lot of it was 4-1 has come up quite a bit, which is like the only thing I remember about it. Yeah, that's hard. There was a game 7 between Boston and Philly that I feel like the Philly was down like 3-0. And then they came back and Boston was really, really sad about it. So I guess any game that would make some team really, really sad, but it was 4-1 game is right there. Cause like I still have the picture of the cake where someone made it like a Maple Leafs cake and said it was 4-1 in icing written on it. And the other game, which doesn't count, I guess, cause I am a Hershey Bears fan, but it's not a Red Wings game. And it was when the Hershey Bears played the Adirondack Phantoms and Andreas Lilia was playing and he got in a fight. And it was when I realized that Andreas Lilia was still alive and still playing hockey. Former Red Wings great Andreas Lilia was playing for the Adirondack Phantoms. So that was another great game that was not the Red Wings.
Man. Yeah, this is such a good question. Chris, do you have one? Or,
yeah, I have a couple. I mean, one is easy for me, and unfortunately that you all can't use because of the Red Wings focused nature of this podcast. You guys might want to question your life choices at this point. Obviously, Game 7 of the 2009 finals.
I slammed my laptop shut. For anyone who doesn't know, that's also that was my birthday.
Oh, man. Yeah, no. I mean, so I was a big Penguins fan back then, because it was just like the most fun team to play in all the NHL video games back then. And so I was a big fan. I remember, I think it was that series of the year before where Brooks Orpik had like the 4 hits in 15 minutes, in 15 seconds. 15 minutes wouldn't have been as impressive. but yeah, like a shift where he's just like knocking everybody out. And I was like, smash my hockey. Yeah. And I was like, oh, this kind of sucks actually. But yeah, definitely like, you know, Fleury's like game winning save and how good that team was. And I was a big Marian Hossa fan because he was, you know, associated with the Thrashers. And so, you know, him, you know, whichever team he was going to was the one that would lose in the Stanley Cup was kind of funny. So definitely that one. I would also say probably the dueling hat tricks game between Crosby and Ovechkin, I want to say in 2009 or 2010. Then after that, man, like I made the argument, and it's probably just me. I was like, it's really hard for me to remember specific hockey games. Mm-hmm. After that, like, I think the biggest critique I have of the NHL, and I'll make sure to pass it over to Peter after this. The biggest critique I have of the NHL is just really hard for me to care about teams that are not my team, especially if they don't have like a compelling narrative. So, like, I was not going to watch, you know, I guess even Colorado Vegas. Like, I knew they were two good teams, but like, as far as the reason why we want to watch that, like, it's very hard for me to build up any animosity or support of either team because I haven't watched them all season. And so I was like, ah, yeah. But those are the two games for me.
I still have trouble.
Even maybe any Olympic games.
I know. Actually, I think that's what I'm going to go with. Well, technically not the Olympics. Because I wasn't really following it and I didn't really watch any of this until later. I think I can technically say this because I would have been rooting for this team, but I wasn't watching it. So I wasn't supporting them at the time. I can't remember who the Team North America game.
Yeah.
I forget who it was against. Canada, I think, or the US. It was right. Or I forget. You know what I'm talking about, right? Like there's an amazing game with Team North America and I can't remember who they played. But it was like back and forth.
I think. And did they lose? They made it like
they definitely
really,
lost.
Really, yeah, they made it. They were good. Because I saw them. They played exhibition games here in DC. So we went and saw Team North America and I think Team USA and I think Finland also. And it was like Team North America was just such a great concept and one of the few times that anything was like just really fun. And I think that counts as a team that you're not like. Because, I had Larkin, but that's it.
Where is it? Oh, yeah. Team North America versus Sweden. That was it.
Oh, their jerseys are so cool.
Yeah, it was just jerseys. Like such a good.
Yeah, why they can never bring it back again. Like the more people liked it, the less likely it
was. Yeah, they're like, whoa, too popular.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. It's like, oh, wait,
we're going to make an over 35 team.
Yeah, that's like the NBA is like, and they did this one time. And he was like, yeah, the dunk contest is, people like it way too much. Like, the All-Star game is about the skill and, the 3-point contest is like, let's take the dunk contest out of it. And like the next year they brought it back. It was like the Vince Carter year, which is like the best dunk contest ever and all that stuff. It's like, if people like it, maybe you want to keep it, but that's beyond the scope of.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. So let's see, Sarah, there were a couple.
Yes. So we've got two Red Wings questions.
And what we can do is we can kind of, Chris, if you want to answer these, like kind of in terms of your general feelings on things like this, because I know you have thoughts on some on the specific things.
And then I'll end then with a question that Chris can definitely chime in on.
Okay.
So these two are from at Dom Shut Up on Twitter. So he says, what he or she or they says, what vets do you see the Wings targeting this offseason for the cheap 1-year deal thing so they can gain assets at the trade deadline? And I'm going to say none. I'm going to say we're beyond that point, that we have so much cap space to throw around that, if anything, we can pick up, dead weight, but not actual players, like dead contracts. I think we've moved beyond the, like, I don't know, not the David Legwand style signings, but things like that. Anything like that. I think we're past that, but what do you think, Peter?
Let's see. I haven't really
any vets to flip at the trade deadline.
Yeah. I mean, the problem with that is that a lot of times people are like, oh yeah, that's what we're going to do. And if my memory serves me correctly, now my memory has been destroyed by the pandemic, but if memory serves, most of the time that we do things like that, we don't actually trade the player at the deadline. The last couple of trade deadlines, it's like, oh yeah, we can trade this guy and trade this guy. And then it doesn't happen. So, I mean, I kind of look at that as maybe you can think of it as kind of like a possible bonus. You know what I mean? Like you should be kind of signing a player for a specific reason. Other than that, and if it doesn't work out or whatever, or if there, there could be a possibility of maybe getting another asset at the trade deadline, like that's great, but like you shouldn't be doing it for that purpose, if that makes sense. Chris, I know you definitely have thoughts about this and about like the rebuild style in general, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I remember getting to this argument with Red Wings fans last year about like them signing like who was it, John Merrill and Troy Stetcher, whatever. I was like, who's that? Oh, Vlad Meskov. And I was like, yeah, like I don't really see the point of making these moves. Like you know, they're going to ruin your draft stock. It's like, no. Like, the draft, we're so horrible. Like, the draft stock would be fine. And we just flipped them for, like, a first rounder at, like, the deadline. I'm like, the last 1 year rental to, like, get flipped at the deadline for more than, like, even a second round pick was, like, PA Parents, or, like, twice in a row. and that was, like, 26. And it was one of the guys from, it was, like, Brooks Leach or something like that from the Capitals. It was, like, in 2017. So, I'm like, yeah, teams always talk themselves into this, like, every single year. Like, we just flip this veteran that nobody else wanted to sign for free for, like, a very, like, you know, valuable draft pick for no apparent reason. But it never works out that way. And so unless like the person, like, to me, if you're taking a flyer on somebody like, I don't know, Josh Hosang or something like that, or like some younger guy, almost like how the thought process was for Vegas in the expansion draft, or how Seattle's potentially going to do it, where you're taking a shot on a younger guy with upside that just has not produced yet. And then, like, that person is actually valuable because if they stay on your team, well, that's a long-term piece you can build around. Or if a contending team really wants them, well, you can flip them, and that person offers more upside than some 30-year-old veteran coming off, like, you know, like, if they get Tyson Berry, for example, like, what is that actually going to accomplish? Like, if they sign Tyson Berry, they sign us a contract that's overpriced to get him in the door and then try to flip him at the deadline. Well, the other teams could have signed us to that contract too and didn't get him. So, like, what is that actually going to accomplish for you? And so, yeah, I think overall, you know, this is something that Prasanth has talked about a lot as well on his RIP podcast, where you know, either it's up for the Red Wings to be aggressive or to double down on the rebuild. And I'm like, I don't think they're ready to not double down on the rebuild. So, like, to avoid becoming the Sabres who pulled the plug on their rebuild prematurely and now are still stuck in said rebuild 5 years after the fact, I think they just need to just go the slow and steady route, find some flyers that no one else was looking at, and maybe flip those for, like, unexpected draft picks. But other than that, just the most valuable prospect and the most valuable player on the Red Wings roster is a player that's not there yet. And to get said player, they just need to be abjectly horrible for another couple seasons until they get to that point.
I'm thinking of a mom voice. It's like, we have players to flip at home because, yeah. You know, like we flipped Bantha and got, you know, yes. It felt like, you know, because it was like that whole trade deadline, and it's easy to kind of only remember the Bantha part, but the whole time we're like, is that it? Like, is this it? And then the Bantha thing, they were like, whoo, thank God. Because, like, we were all kind of like I was about to criticize Steve Yzerman. I didn't want to have to put myself through that, but it's like, we have pieces to flip at home. And I, you know, as much as anyone, get, you know, irrationally attached to every player. And I'm like, no, we should just keep everyone forever and they should all play really well. Well, they won't. You know, there's been, you know, rumors now of the Maple Leafs having interest in Tyler Bertuzzi. And as much as I wouldn't want to see that, I also wouldn't mind seeing them get absolutely fleeced and, you know, us getting a whole bunch of really great stuff, having another Mantha, a Mantha deal. Obviously, they'll send us Austin Matthews and I won't be allowed to make fun of him anymore. You know, but it's, you know, those. We have, it's like, you know, really, we have players at home. We do. we have plenty of people that can flip that aren't, you know, Stanley Cup caliber. And I hate saying that because it's cliche and stupid, but like, you know, any of Prashant's charts will be like, here's how they would perform. Blue is good. Red is bad. And like every player is red except Larkin. And you Jonathan Bernier.
Except for this last season. I mean, Larkin was like really red this season. Yeah. You know, one thing I think is interesting is that obviously, you know, Chris was pointing to, you know, some of the free agent signings. You know, the good thing is that Yzerman is not going out and repeating mistakes of past Red Wings general managers, like one person I can think of signing players to 4-year deals and 5-year deals and 6-year deals in free agency. Like, you know, he's signing these players to 1-year deals and maybe two. So if it's a mistake, you're not stuck with it for, you know, right now trying to figure out, do we buy out Franz Nielsen? which everybody knew at the time would be the conversation now, but we had hoped to get more out of him before that. But one thing I think is promising in that regard is that a lot of the trades that Yzerman's been doing as the Red Wings general manager have been in the mold of like what Chris, what you were talking about before. Basically taking flyers on players that haven't worked out in other organizations. Like obviously the Brendan Perlini deal did not work out, but the Robbie Fabry deal did work out you know, tremendously so far, you know, and it seems like Iserman is trying to, like, it seems like that's his plan when he does add pieces, unless it's somebody where you can add like a really good young player for, you know, as like a foundational piece. It's basically try to see if we can find value with another team that they haven't found, you know, they haven't basically realized their potential. Right. And it's not always going to work. Like I said, Brendan Perlini flamed out, didn't really work, but Fabbri did. And you know, that it seems like that's what he's going to be trying to do for the next little while in terms of, you know, looking for value where other teams don't see it, which I think is good. Let's see. And Sarah, there's one more from him, right?
Yes. Okay. So, the second question was, do you think it makes more sense for Lucas Raymond to play the entire season in the AHL, regardless of play, so that we can stretch his entry level contract longer?
Now, this is an interesting question because one of the things I've been talking about a lot recently, just in general, but also like in kind of hockey, like Sarah and I we're talking about it with other people in our Winging It in Motown like chat channel, is how easy it is to kind of be like get kind of lost in your narratives, you know, things that you believe to be true, you know, and maybe they were, but then like you have to be open to changing your mind if new information becomes available. And I think one of the biggest changes for me recently, maybe the past couple of years, is for a long time I was on board. I was basically a proponent of like, yeah, you slide that ELC. You want to save it for when they're better and they're in the league. But from what I've seen, I've kind of come around to the other way of thinking, which is on average, I'm not going to say it's going to work for every player, but on average, especially with players like this that are, you know, hopefully going to be top players, you want to do the opposite. You want to get them in as soon as possible because you want to get to their first non-ELC contract as soon as possible before they take off. You know, like you don't want to be paying, you know, Adam Fox, right? Wins the Norris Trophy, cat's out of the bag. Guess what? He's pretty good, you know? So now obviously I'm not saying New York's like, oh man, this sucks, you know? But you know, on some level, you know, his next contract's going to be a lot bigger than it would have been if he had, you know, been a year later in the process, right? But there's a lot of players who you can get them. And I mean, if I remember correctly, I'm pretty sure it was the second contract. Like Nathan MacKinnon got locked in on an RFA deal. You know, he's not the only one, but he got locked in on an RFA deal, and that worked out really well for Colorado. Like, I'm not going to say it's going to work out every single time, but it seems like on average, the smarter play for a team with a very good player is to get them to their first RFA contract as quickly as possible so that hopefully you can take advantage of getting some of those years a little bit cheaper than you would if it was later on and you saw, you know, they realize more of their potential. That being said, I do kind of hate that as somebody who is a supporter of the players, right? Because I don't want the players to get screwed. But at the same time, if you're talking about in terms of building a team, you have to look at it through that perspective. So that's my answer is basically if he is ready to play in the NHL and it's not going to hurt his development, like he's not in way over his head, I want him in the NHL once he's ready. Like, I don't want to keep him in the AHL longer than we have to. That's my perspective.
Yeah, I think you're right there. And, you know, I've said this about trades and drafting too. It's, you know, it's not only about building the player, but it's about building the whole team. And, you know, if you can get him playing with the people that ideally he's going to be playing with for some time and, you know, being part of a Stanley Cup caliber roster or, you know, just the playoffs. Let me reel that back in. Just making the playoffs. But, you know, getting him here, you know, whatever league he needs to be in, you know, but not promoting him too early. I always think about how, you know, Zadina came up to the NHL and, you know, he struggled. He went back to Grand Rapids and then he came and was like, just took off totally on fire. That's exactly where he needed to be. You know, so it's a business thing, but it's also not crushing the player. but also getting them the competition they need to grow. You know, just finding that right spot for them to grow as a player, and also as, you know, part of a line, and be like, well, you know, what kind of chemistry are we already seeing? You know, what are we missing now? You say, okay, well, we got two guys here who are really good. What kind of third guy do we need? Maybe that impacts how we draft, how we trade. I just want to make the playoffs. I just want to make the playoffs. Wherever he has to play for us to make the playoffs in the next 3 years. That's my answer.
There you go.
Yeah, quickly, and Peter, we talked about this a bunch when it came to like Dylan Larkin and stuff like that. 100% in agreement that getting them up faster is usually better, not only for the whole burning the ELC thing. Just like, yeah, one of those hockey axioms that has no like basis in fact or logic. Is just like, yeah, somebody thought this was a good idea and decided like that's the way going forward, like goalie pools. So I think that's part one of it. The other part of it is like there is also, and you see this a lot in the NFL, where a lot of the thought process now is when you draft a rookie quarterback, even if they're not like amazing and they're going to be a better player 5 years from now than they are now, the difference is between that player 5 years from now is like he'll be like 20% better, but he'll like cost like 10 times more versus like, and the same thing in the NHL where like, yes, some players aren't ready to contribute from day one, but the thought process around, for example, the Canucks with Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes is like, man, it'd be amazing if we had cap space to build around these guys and go all in for a push right now. Because once they sign their contracts and they're in at $8 to $10 million a year, it's going to be much harder to find support pieces around them. The other justification for that is because you sort of, once you already have your like roster in place and it's already good enough, then you can follow the Tampa model of having your best players signed for $2-3 million underneath market value, because like, well, the team's already good. There's no cap space left and I'm kind of don't have leverage at this point in time anyway. So it's like, I might as well lock into a good team or at least get a bridge deal here or there. But teams are so risk averse that they actually end up backing themselves into a corner. So as you said, Adam Fox is going to take up a significant, you know, salary space versus, oh man, it'd be great if I could fit all these young players under the cap at once and bring them all on board. And so, yeah, so I think, you know, the other thing, I'm just always very skeptical. It always depends on like the situation and the talent base around them. But I'm very skeptical that the AHL is a good development league for players, particularly if they weren't going to be good players anyway. I don't think that people go down to the AHL and say, I'm going to work on wrist shots from 25 feet out. I'm just going to be like go from a 10 goal scorer to like a 40 goal scorer overnight. Like that's not how the AHL works. Like they're like I'm going to work on my skating, go from like below average to like, Mason Raymond or something like that. Yeah. So I just think like there's a lot of defaulting to the AHL being a great developmental league major junior being a great place for players to stay and percolate, but they're just going to dominate and do well there, but that has no bearing on how well they're doing in the NHL against like real players. And so I think the best approach is, you know, identify what's best for your team's long-term strategy. And it's almost irrelevant who the player is, just like bring them out, that they're ready to do it. And if you have a place for them to play, and if not, then yeah, keep them in the minors.
I'm going to submit my question out of the mailbag.
Okay.
So this is, what is the first NHL video game you've ever played? And what is your favorite NHL game you've ever played? And I'll throw that to Chris first.
First one I ever played was NHL. No, not even NHL 94. That's a lot. There's a Mario Lemieux game that came out around the same time. It was like the NHL PA game where the players didn't have actual names or something like that. And the teams were like, you know, the Pennsylvania, like Arctic Birds or something like that. So I remember playing that. I did play NHL 94, but wasn't all that impressed, to be honest. But probably my favorite game was definitely NHL 2K8. Two reasons. One, the soundtrack was utterly amazing. Probably by far the best video game, sports video game soundtrack ever. And then they always have this move with Jordan Staal where you just like speed down the right wing, you know, make a deke and then like just go past the goaltender and beat him on the far post. And so that's like 10 goals a game. So yeah, that was always a lot of fun.
I'm pretty sure that was the game where they had like all the, like the alumni teams, right? Like all the old teams.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
My first NH, my first, see, it's hard because if we could change it to hockey as opposed to NHL, it would definitely.
Or no, hockey. Okay. Any, or just name all the ones you played. Talk about any of them.
Well, it would be, because then it would be Blades and Steel. That was the first hockey game I ever played for Nintendo. And that was, that is an amazing game in its own right. Obviously not even anywhere close to, you know, the fidelity of, to the NHL, but it was a ton of fun. I think my favorite hockey game, I do agree with Chris. I really like those 2K, like there's a couple years where 2K made hockey games and it was fantastic. But I'm going to go a little bit off the path. And my favorite hockey game was the hockey mode in ATV Off-Road Fury 2. it's basically like now they have Rocket League, which is amazing. It's basically what they have in Rocket League, but with ATVs. Where they like hit a puck around and like, you know, a giant puck and they have to hit it into the goal. And you could like play like four players against each other. And like my brother and I used to play that for hours. Sarah, I forget. I know you play video games. I mean, we talk about this all the time, but I don't know if you play hockey video games.
Not recently. So I was texting my brother about this, which is why I thought of it. I said, what was that game that we still have and still works on Sega Genesis? That we play anytime that we're home, which is rarely. So it's we had NHL 96, we had ESPN Hockey Night, and which we lost somewhere in the house. And I think we have NHL 97. I think 96 is the one we still have. It's whichever. I think that one had Steve Yzerman on the cover. And what I liked about it is that you could just take your goalie and score a breakaway goal. So I think at one point Chris Osgood was leading the team in goals and fights. So, but my favorite game was NHL Hits 2002, where your players would get struck by lightning when they scored a hat trick, and you could just, it was a PlayStation, so you just mash the buttons, cheat codes, so you'd have like a giant snowman head, and you'd be playing with like a light up tennis ball, and it'd be snowing, or you'd be in the desert, like you could just have this, and you never knew what so we'd sit there and we'd like, okay, ready, start mashing buttons, and just seeing what kind of game we came up with all the cheat codes, because we never wrote them down. But that's also the most recent like hockey video game I played would be still NHL Hits 2002. I mean, technically the last one I played was NHL 96 because we still have it and our Genesis still works.
Nice. I remember NHL Hits. That was a lot of fun. All right. So we are going to we're going to stop there. Real quick to wrap up. First of all, thanks for listening. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow me at P Flynn Hockey. You can follow Sarah at Helmeroids, and you can follow Chris at YOLO_Pinato. You can follow the podcast at 200 Foot Pod, 200 FTPOD. I will eventually tweet from that at some point. I'm horrible at it. I say it every single time and I don't get any better. You can also, we have a Facebook page that I'm similarly bad at updating, facebook.com/forsurepod. And lastly, if you want to get some For Sure merchandise, some shirts, some pillows, there's a tote bag or whatever, you can get those at tinyurl.com/forshirt, FERSHIRT. So Chris, thank you so much for joining us. It was awesome.
Thank you guys.
All right. So have a great time. We will see you. Actually, we will be back next week. Typically it's every 2 weeks. We will be back next week with our special draft episode. We have Will, from the website Scouching. And then we also have Dylan Galloway from Future Considerations. So that'll be fun. We'll talk about all the, I got a week to figure out how to make, a Buff Boys reference from the new season of I Think You Should Leave, which is amazing if you haven't watched it. Anyway, have a good time. We'll see you later. Bye.
For sure.
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 For sure,
for sure,
for sure.